why don't you guys, you can just go down the line, just start with Jeremy and just tag all the way down. Do you have a favorite moment that you've experienced while being with us? It doesn't have to be on camera or a talent. It could be something that we've done. You can let the people in on something or an experience you've had, or, I mean, cause you come from the NBA as well. So, I mean, how's all this work?
Yeah, it's a lot different than my 24 years with the Suns for sure, but I'm loving every minute of it. Got a chance to start out on commentary with John Roberts, who gave me a lot of advice and coaching along the way, and then got paired up with Dan. Dan, I think you need to put the belt over your shoulder while you're.
Oh, the belt. I mean, I don't have it just laying around. Oh, wait, this belt. Oh.
Yeah, there you go. That's better.
I didn't realize.
Ladies and gentlemen, the United Television champion, Dan Joseph.
There you go. And Dan and I work great together, so he's been a blast to work with. I think the most memorable thing for me was when I interviewed the Keepers of the Faith backstage, and Gallo just slowly pulled his chain off and wrapped it around my neck and started pulling, and I had no idea it was coming. So I'm trying to ask questions as I'm getting choked on air, which was interesting. But so that was probably the most unique situation. But I've just had a blast. Johnny has given me some great advice as well. And got a chance to work with Carl and David. You've been a big help. So I really appreciate just being a part of all this.
Awesome. Okay, Jim.
I think to reiterate what I was saying a moment ago, probably the coolest thing for me is all those students that came in there, you know, and after we got a couple tapings, just watching them grow, you know, and they're not all necessarily wrestling fans, but they're getting this opportunity to have their work put on ABC7, and they realize that. And to see them sort of light up and bring ideas to the table, and just, you know, when we came in for that second set of tapings, they were so really on it and just, you know, really engaged. That's been very fun for me to be honest. It makes me kind of want to go into teaching a little bit too. But it's definitely sort of helped stoke their professional fires as well. And so hopefully, you know, they might end up in pro wrestling for a protracted period of time as well. But I think that to me is the coolest thing. And I have to shout out just how supportive everyone at the Golden State Warriors has been. You know, when you released the press release and they saw it, they were all just so excited for me and just have been very supportive. So that's been pretty rad.
Dan Joseph.
I really didn't have any idea of like about like wrestling, like how it, you know, how it worked, how the show, any of that stuff.
Well, let me say this real quick. It's not like it's a favorite moment, but like when Dan was in wrestling school and coming through all this, and he was asking me, like, oh, what should I watch? What should I do? And I was like, oh, you know, this is Tommy Ridge, and this is that, whatever. Ricky Morton, whatever. I knew he can talk just because I have a conversation with him. He's a great conversation. He knows how to talk. So I said, why don't you look at this? Because I know I'd never seen him before. I said, watch some Dusty Rhodes. Watch some Terry Funk. Check this out. And so he watched him, and he pulled me aside, and he goes, hey, I watched those interviews.
Like, hey, come on now.
But he's like, why are they yelling so much? They're just yelling. Like, why? They're like angry, but yelling.
They were. They were so mad. But no, I didn't know what wrestling was. So coming on the show then and seeing it grow from, you know, the Glendale, the red curtains everywhere, and then seeing it to what we have now, like, I don't want to be like sappy, but that's kind of like that development and that growth has been like my favorite part of all this, just watching it blossom into the show. And then I'm a champion and stuff. So,
but how about in ring or anything? Like you're in the mix with the guys. It's, and even backstage, it's just, you know, you're a part of it on different levels. Like, is there anything that stands out? You're on road trips. Like,
Yeah, road trips are fun. We've had trips going to Arizona. The rookie ran out of gas on us.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't know if he didn't want to pull over, if he just thought he wanted to make good time or something, but we're in the middle of Arizona. We ran out of gas. Like, awesome. It's not the desert. This is great.
But how about all those times traveling with Joe Galli since he's not here?
I never.
You really were never in the car with Joe Galli?
I mean, maybe I was in the van with him once, maybe. But you guys leave so early on Friday. I have, you know, children and stuff, so I'm staying home. I can't. I got to bounce early Saturday morning, so I'm taking the late train up.
Yeah, I mean,
Joe Galli is an excellent traveling companion.
I feel like what's great about about Arizona, and I know there's all, actually a lot of people that travel to Hollywood too, that there's always like some type of camaraderie and family that like everyone comes together to, like, we have this show on a Saturday or on a Sunday, and sorry, my cat's meowing. and everyone just goes in, like, whether you're a wrestler or whether you're on commentary or whether you're backstage, like, everyone is like, you know what, I'm going to do this show because it means something. And so all the passion is there. And even in the van to Arizona, there's lots of wrestling talk, and because everyone loves it. And it shows when we produce a show and people get to see it and enjoy it.
All right, Mandic.
Okay, oh. By far my favorite, yikes.
My right here.
By far my favorite moment ever was nervously pacing the Desert Diamond Casino in Tucson. You told me what the call time was for my first ever show, and I got there like 2.5 hours early. And in more than a decade in news, I've never wanted to throw up. I was so nervous. And you guys at least just quelled and iced all my fears of what that first experience is like. But I will go back to my first interview, that being Mike Knox. And it's so tangible of you just like leading me, it felt like by the hand, and you're like, here we go, you're gonna interview Mike Knox. And I'm like, I didn't even have words. I was so focused on shaking hands, and I was so focused on etiquette and all that I forgot what I was there to do. And I get up to him, and you're like, Mike, Carl, and I'm like, he's like, hey, bro, you're gonna have to pull me through this one. You're gonna have to pull me through this promo. I'm like, I've never done this. I don't know what you're, he's like, where are we going with this? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm trying to like, I'm trying to look around. I'm like, I was completely, but it was the best learning tool ever of getting that trial by fire. Going off of what Emily said, I love the fact that with Arizona, getting to wear multiple hats, and I see it as a pie chart. I love the fact that I get to interview and ask actual questions, and then actually pick the brains of the people in the back and watch people interact. And I'm big to just sit back and watch and be a sponge, because I don't feel like I have to lend my advice or this or that. I mean, that's what I see in my brain of like, all right, a little bit, we're going to be doing some interviews, a little bit, watch guys react, a little bit, watch fans react, a little bit, you know, listen to how the play-by-play and color goes back and forth. And to get all of that into one day you can't put a price tag on that.
All right. Okay, Stars.
First of all, man, shout out to the NBA. The Suns, the Grizzlies, and the Warriors.
That's right.
That's awesome, man. That's one of the most fun things, but I think Maria has a memory.
So we do a lot of silly things in studio just to keep our Memphis audience engaged. And so we've smashed cakes in Dustin's face. We've done a lot of crazy things on there, but I think our favorite would have been flying to Hollywood and being a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, of course.
Yes.
Awesome. And then also just being there, and the first time, that was actually, believe it or not, first time we ever met Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're business partners and such, but we never met face-to-face in person. So meeting him there, and just like meeting everybody else, almost everybody in the room here, just about, but that was in itself was just a great experience. But also, Dave, you know this, just sitting at the desk the first time growing up watching Lance Russell and Dave Brown, that was like the ultimate bucket list for me. And anybody that doesn't know Lance Russell and Dave Brown, you've got to Google it and go watch some Memphis wrestling. And then also to be able to work with Dave, because Dave is a spokesperson on the show. We actually had him here today recording commercials, just to be able to work with the guys that you grew up basically idolizing. So, but yeah, that's a lot of memories.
Todd.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. I you know, piggyback on what Emily said, I think just that family dynamic, you know, I go back, guys like Johnny, we were there since the beginning. So we got to kind of experience each other's journeys and the different places we got to go and the different places that our experience with Hollywood took us. You know, a couple things that stand out for me, I think calling Pierce and Cabana in 2011 for the NWA World's Heavyweight title, calling an NWA World's Heavyweight title change and having it be in such a great atmosphere. And Mongoose was there handing out milk because Cabana had promised to buy everybody a drink if he won. It was just such a magical moment. I think a real highlight in our, you know, in our decade plus. But just everybody I've gotten to work with. Like Johnny, I mentioned. Stu, working with like Andrew Jassic, and Stu gave me that kind of Gorilla Bobby dynamic, which was fun. But what I'm not caught off guard too often. And I remember working with Dan Joseph. I think it was one of the first times we worked together. It was so funny. Producers in our ear, all right, we're going to break in 5, 4, 3. Dan's talking at the time, and he goes, all right, we got to take a break. Hey, Todd, why don't you tell him all about that? I'm like, we got to take a break? Why did you just send it to break? It was so genuine and so hilarious. And we were laughing through the whole break. And and then I remember just, you know, by the way, looking at Dan, I'm afraid that Pac-3 is going to come back, taking a look at that shave job. But one other time that really cracked me up on commentary was there's some sort of a battle royal, and Percy Pringle, for some reason, was on commentary. His man, Ricker, was in the match. And I remember he was just on Willie Mack the whole time on commentary, just saying, he's not a wrestler. He's a boxer. He doesn't belong in the wrestling ring. He's a boxer. And I'm trying to call the action. Hey, Mike, he's a boxer. And then the funniest thing was they did the end was, I think it was Ricker and Willie, where they both kind of went out and touched at the same time and who won and who hit first. And it was Ricker. Ricker hit first. Didn't he? It was Ricker. Well, you don't want to hit first when you're getting thrown out of a battle royal. He's Ricker hit first. Say it. I think that's when he got into it with Johnny. And I mean, it was chaotic, but that was super fun. And now working with so many styles of people, working now with Blake, who's, you know, bona fide heavyweight contender. So having that kind of sports analyst style in there that can really break down the striking and the grappling. I've had the pleasure of working with so many great talents in my time in United, and helps iron sharpens iron. It helps me be a better performer too.
Robert.
You know, for me, growing up, once I found pro wrestling, I wanted to be a pro wrestler. But before that, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. So getting to be involved in a very successful pro wrestling television show as a broadcaster in amongst itself is a huge bullet point for me. But one of the big things for me in my career with the United Wrestling Network was actually my audition process. David had reached out to me and said, hey, you know, Grant Pachoco's leaving the show. We have an opening for a backstage interviewer. Would you like to come audition? And I said yes, and came down. I drove down from the Bay Area with the Classic Connection with Levi Shapiro and Buddy Royal and Zicky Dice, current NWA television champion. And that day also happened to be the day that David Arquette was wrestling RJ City in his return to the ring for my audition. So when it came time to do it, I did it with the Classic Connection for my audition. Went well, and then with Zicky Dice. Little did I know that Nick Bonanno, from what I'm told, had told Zicky to mess with me. And so I go, ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing here with Zicky Dice, and next thing I know, Zicky is right here in my face screaming at me. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is what we're doing. Noel Marquez pulled me aside a couple minutes later after that, and he said, hey, we have one more thing for you. And I was like, what's that? He goes, you're going to interview David Arquette. And I was like, okay, cool. He's like, just do it. And that happened, and that was a pretty cool moment. It never made air, but it was still a pretty cool moment to get to be there with a bona fide Hollywood star for my audition to be on Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. So that was pretty cool.
All right. Hey, Andrew, so people might not know this. You were a competitor on the show in a tag team, Anchors Away, and then you went away, and then you came back as a broadcaster. So between whether it be in-ring goofiness, wrestling junk, or dumb broadcasting that I just kind of threw you in, what are your memories?
Wrestling junk. That's I remember. It's funny because when we were brought into championship wrestling, we had never been good guys before. We were always really mean-spirited people. We were known for being, you know, real jerks. But in addition to that, we did a lot of comedic humor in the ring. So when we were brought in to be good guys, this patriotic American flag waving team, I had it in the back of my head the entire time. I was like, this isn't going to work. People are going to turn on me. They're going to feel like I felt about Lex Luger in the 90s. And I remember there was an instance where my partner, Trevor, he couldn't make a show. So we had to do something where he just wasn't involved in a match. And at the time we were feuding with, I want to say it was Tito and Rico. And so it was going to be 2-on-1, me versus them, obviously. And they were trying to decide of things to do. And all I could think of was like, well, Anchors Away would do this, 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 and this. And we went out and had like a 7-minute match. It's funny because I was interviewed before the match by, I want to say it was Johnny Liquasto. The match was called by Stu Stone and Todd Kennelly, which is kind of like, you know, bringing everything kind of full circle, which is kind of funny. But anyway, we did the match and I was able to see from a good guy's perspective of how ridiculous that team looks when doing the Anchors Away stuff, which to me was so delightful to see because you could look at yourself on tape or whatever. And, you know, you always have this different perception of yourself than everybody else has, but to be able to see a team do it in front of me was, to me, was just so magical in the most ridiculous way. So that's probably my favorite moment at championship wrestling.
Okay. Liquasto, now you're up.
Wow. I'm just going to go through obviously everything Todd said and, you know, all the great memories we had, but I have a list of just, to me, you know, as iconic as it gets, as far as championship wrestling. Speaking of Percy, to piggyback off that, is shortly after Percy passed away, we had the red carpet rumble. I think that maybe the loudest I've ever heard our live audience was when Ricker made his entrance at number one for the red carpet rumble. And not only that, he goes on to win the thing and then has the match that never happened with Scorpio Sky. Only the people that were there live saw it, and it was amazing because they're two of the absolute best, but it was never broadcast. So that was an amazing memory. Bad Dude Tito ending Avalon's 672-day reign in about 27 seconds was just so impactful, and I give them both a lot of credit. Vermin holding all the titles up at once, I'll never forget watching that. And also, as far as commentary, I think my favorite memory was, I don't know where Todd was at the time. He may have been gone at that point, or maybe he was just missing. It was Stu and I calling a match, and Stu was feuding with Willie Mack. And it was during a match where the Hobo was trying to become number one contender. Willie chases Stu away from the announce desk, around the ring, and out of the whole venue. And I had to call, like, the last 2 minutes solo. Hobo wins. And it was such, like, a – Hobo had such a unique, organic babyface reaction by the audience. And people were genuinely so happy to see him win. It was really great to be able to call that for him. You know, that was cool.
All right. Now, something I want to ask you, Johnny, not to keep everything on hold. Your time in the WWE, working with people who were with us on our broadcast, and then were also working with you there. Just the dynamic and seeing how that whole operation works. Are there a lot of similarities?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of similarities. When it comes down to it, a lot of stuff is last minute. A lot of stuff is last second. you know, you don't have a lot of time to prepare, whether you are a wrestler superstar doing an interview or you're the person interviewing. A lot of stuff changes on the fly. I mean, even on the headset, there's stuff that happens that, well, that's not on the sheet, but okay, here we go. Like, so it's all wrestling when it comes down to it. So the one thing I would preach to anyone on championship wrestling still, whether it's backstage or competing in the ring, is get every bit you can from it. Take it as seriously as possible because you can utilize everything no matter where you go.
But like, just even think about this. So it's like, if you're, whether you're in the pre-production meeting or actually doing a broadcast, you may have Adam Pearce in your ear as a producer, which you've experienced before. you may toss to Kathy Campanelli, whose name was Kat Marino, or you might toss over to Kathy Kelly, and then Drew Gulak might be wrestling in the ring. So
that happened, actually. Pierce was in my ear quite a bit, and there was also an on-cam where I pitched to an interview with Kat Marino. So, you know, Kat and I are still very close, sure. Both down here in Florida. And, yeah, I mean, very surreal stuff. But I owe everything to Championship Wrestling, so that's for sure.
Well, thank you. I wasn't looking for that, but thank you. Okay, Blake, since we're going to lose the light with you, and I know you're the quite possibly the newest member of this whole thing, but I know you watched the show a little bit before you joined, like, and now being there, maybe the question for you is, who's your just favorite to watch?
My favorite to watch right now, I'm a big fan of tag teams that are able to have a good cohesive, well, it's not two guys out there in a match, but two guys that are a team. So I'm a huge fan of tag teams. I would say Wolf Zaddies right now are probably my favorite guys to watch get in there. You know, Tito's got the grappling background too, and so I like watching big mean bruisers go in there and toss dudes around, man. That's what the Wolf Zaddies do. So I'd probably say the Wolf Zaddies are my favorite United Wrestling Network group of guys right now.
Who's your favorite singles competitor?
Definitely D'Angelo, without a doubt.
And you know, Grant had, I think, has an advantage here because much like Todd and Johnny, they were around when we kind of had a revolving door of lots of people going in and out. So Grant, for lack of a better term, was our Gene Okerlund, and he talked to everybody. So you have to have tons because he's, you know, if you ever did backstage interviews, you know, the pre-tape stuff, there are outtakes and outtakes and outtakes and producing and someone sticking their fingers in and no, say it like this. Or I might be across the room and I hear something. And I'm like, no, say it like this. And they're like, yeah, fuck Dave. You don't have to do it like that. Do it like this. So what about you, Grant?
Yeah. I mean, the backstage promos were a little nerve wracking for me because I always felt like, don't mess this up. And a lot of times when whoever the talent was, when they would finish what they were saying, I just wouldn't say anything. Like even if I had to throw it to the ring, because I go, I'm going to mess this up. Because I remember one time when we were in Glendale, I think I was interviewing Joey Ryan maybe, but I called him Johnny Goodtime at the very end. He does this big long promo and I go, there you go, Johnny Goodtime. And he was like, and like, everyone's like, what are you doing? I was like, ugh. But it was a lot of fun. It was always great. And I always just had a great time. It was, a lot of fun memories getting to talk to everybody. And the other thing I wanted to bring up, one of my favorite things was getting to do these Phil Singer Games cards. We were the first, Championship Wrestling from Hollywood was the first indie fed to get these game cards. There's Dan Joseph.
I can go run. I got my whole, all the pack.
No, it's all right. It's all right. You don't need to. It's okay. But getting to do those cards was a lot of fun. And we're still making kind of bootleg cards, now on. And, definitely in ring, getting to sort of live my sort of manager fantasies with Dan Joseph and Todd Chandler as Footloose, at the urging of Stu Stone, who was just like, just go out there. And that was so much fun. But I think my favorite memory, and this happened in two instances, was when Sean Ricker won a casket match. And I think it was Ryan Taylor won the PP3 Cup, I believe. The first one, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Percy stole it because he was like, no, this has to go to Sean. This has to go to my thing. And there was a little girl in the crowd who was screaming at Percy and just and I just loved it because it was so believable to her. And I was like, that was me. That was me when I was little. And another time there was a group of kids at the Ocean View Pavilion who I forget exactly what was happening, but one of the bad guys did something really dastardly. And these kids were just screaming at the top of their lungs. And to me, that's why this is so fun. And this is so much fun to do, is to see those people who just believe it 100% and they're just 100% there, because that was me.
Yep.
Awesome.
You know, Grant, recently I've been like digging through some of the archive stuff, And it's funny that you mentioned Todd Chandler and Dan Joseph Footloose, because I randomly stumbled across the footage of the day that Todd Chandler turned on Dan Joseph. And your reaction, why did you break up the greatest tag team ever? Just, it was fantastic, your reaction. You were so heartbroken to see Footloose disband forever. It was amazing.
I still am.
You know, I try not to get involved in the conversation, but I'm going to, because there are way too many memories that I've forgotten. But you know, my first is actually the first time I got to work with Peter Avalon in We Were at the Galaxy, and when we gave him the moniker of the biggest man in pro wrestling, he was having such a hard time because he was so young, so new, and I just threw him in there. I don't even think he knew that Colt Cabana was going to be his first opponent. And in going into the series, I felt we needed someone to build the show around for longevity. You know, in my mind, it was like, well, Pierce is going to be around, but he's older. He's probably going to move on another situation, get tired of this, which he eventually did. And now he's a producer for the WWE. So I figured I was going to create my Erica Kane story from all my children. I was going to have my young talent. And as long as the program goes, and hopefully there's longevity with the program, this is going to be my focal point, the beacon of the program to always get back to. And seeing Scared, and for the people who were there doing those interviews, it was not easy. And it was, and back then, I was a different person too. So a lot more adult words, a lot more being upset, a lot of red faces, a lot of high blood pressure. It was a different time. Behind the scenes too, because there was a lot going on in the NWA, which eventually led to what it led to. But I had a lot going on. And it's funny, Dustin, you say that, you know, Memphis Wrestling was one of the last in-studio wrestling shows on broadcast, which is true in the United States. Championship Wrestling from Hollywood was actually the first TV station wrestling show, local show, to go back on to a full power TV station on a full-time basis here in Los Angeles on KDOC-TV. So Peter, watching his story going all the way through and every beat that we've created with Peter, and the guys who are in the meetings will probably remember me always focusing back on Peter. It's like, no, this has to go back to him. I think we made him a dual champion at one time. And being the valiant champion that he is, he surrenders one of them to just defend one the best he can, blah, 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 blah. Going all the way towards the end with Nico and The Office, and now he's the librarian. So to me, that's a great fulfilling story that took 10 years practically to tell. And it worked. And the other memories that I have are just the behind the scenes craziness that the folks, you people, don't see. We had a producer on the program who's a dear friend to most of us who has passed, Joe Franciosi, and we knew him as Joe Schmo. And you may hear his name every now and again come up. Joe was an amazing person in every regard. You would never, if you just hear stories about this guy, you would think that we were making it up. He was everything that you hear about when it comes to Joe Schmo.
Maniac.
And what was that?
He's a maniac.
A complete maniac. And you viewers right now, if you ever saw the segments that John Lovitz did in the WWE on Raw, I don't know what year it would have been, but there's a very memorable moment where a fan comes out of the stands and takes his eye out for money. That's Joe Schmo. So that just shows Joe 10,000% of the ridiculousness that we would put together. We were physical with each other. We were brothers in the truest definition. We fist fought with each other. It was a very intense marriage for a very long time. Todd brought him up earlier as his co-host on his first match he ever called. So the three of us were with each other a very long time, but I'm sure everybody has Schmo stories. If you want to share one, you're welcome to, because Schmo was just Todd.
I mean, just, he was a human cartoon, man. You know,
you got it.
You know, it was just, he was crazy. He's always in a sleeveless t-shirt and you know, but he was a genius at times as well. You know, I mean, he was never a dull moment. with Schmo. And yeah, I mean, we'll certainly never forget him. I know he got into it with you sometimes. I remember one time where he got into it with the Scrap Daddy backstage, and that was pretty crazy. But he really did. He really did love the business, and he really, really loved the talent, and tried to come up with great ideas for the talent, and truly just emotionally was invested in the talent and wanted to work hard to help, you know, get them over and elevate their careers.
And to anyone who's wondering why Schmo would step up to Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, it's because Schmo actually couldn't see how big Pearce was. Literally, could not see. Yeah.
So, you know, we go ahead.
I have a Schmo question for those that knew him, because I never had the pleasure of knowing him. But it seems like every image, whether it's a still or video that I see of him, he's always wearing a Cookie Monster shirt. Was that like it just – did he have like five different versions of it that he just wore all the time?
He had one. And I just recently saw his son wearing that same shirt on Facebook.
I remember I interviewed Hobo in the shower because Schmo told me to do that. That's what we're doing this time. And then I also remember we filmed a segment where Heather Lynn slapped me. And it was a legit slap in the face. And then Joe just kept going, yeah, we didn't quite get it. Because after she slapped me, they went out in the hallway and did this big whole thing. And they kept coming back in and go, we didn't quite get it. We have to do it again. So whenever I think of Joe, I think of getting slapped in the face by Heather Lynn repeatedly.
No, Joe is ridiculous. He his fingerprint is still all over the program. And he really created a really good heartbeat with Angelo and Johnny Yuma too, where they were so in, I was so far into pro wrestling and how to produce a show and the fundamentals of it, and going back even into the kayfabe pieces of it, but Schmo wanted to kill all that immediately. And the underdog, if you watch the Adam Pearce, this is a memory that I hate, and it's 100% Joe Schmo. I made the biggest deal that when Cabana was winning this title and the Milk was coming out, that everybody treat this like the World Series. This is the biggest thing we can do, the biggest anything. And unbeknownst to me, Schmo, who was a writer on the program and a producer, David Lagana was there at the time too. I'm in there trying to do my best interview. This is the greatest thing ever. Here we go. You're the world's champion. And in front of me, there's a guy by the name of Sexy Chino, who you may or may not know. Really, really thin Asian, just a wiry cartoon character in himself. But Schmo instructed him, because his gimmick was he was just like this dancing thing, the dancing fool. He just wouldn't stop dancing. And so I'm trying to do this interview, and Schmo had him go right in front of the hard cam in front of me and Cabana. And you can see me like, get him out of the way. And every camera we went to, there was Sexy Chino doing his dance, and I could hear Schmo behind the curtain, just because he had this laugh that went like, and I could hear him through. I was like,
it's like the Cookie Monster.
Bitch. What's that?
It sounds like the Cookie Monster.
Yeah. So that's Joe. His fingers are all over everything. He was always under the influence. It's the wrestling that you don't hear about today. And so many stars on the program are there because of Joe. And the other person would be John Ian, who also passed away. He a huge part of our show, and always the underdogs. And here I am, like, we're going to do something with Sean Spears and Sean Ricker and Brian Cage in that pro wrestling sense. And then I have Sexy Chino and who knows where else, which should be below the undercard, and Schmo's pushing them, the nobodies. And I'm looking at these guys like, what, we're going to invest TV time in these guys? Why? You'll find out. Well, I don't want to find out. Tell me what we're doing. I mentioned the fist fight. I used to direct the show, and so I'm sitting there directing, and he created a tag team tournament that was the worst, I think one of the worst things we ever produced. I still, the Summer Tag Team Classic or something.
Oh my, the scoring on that. Yep, nothing.
Yeah, there were points. It was so messed up. Angelo had a big hand in that too. It was messed up. And all I remember is I'm directing and none of this is making sense. And every time I go to turn, there's usually a producer who's in charge of the segment with you. And Shmo wrote the majority of it. And so every time I would turn, I say, I don't understand this. He got tired of me saying that and he disappeared and he went and got high. And so he came back and I said to him, I said, this is horrible. What am I supposed to do with this? And Shmo looked me with his one eye and went, don't air it. I went ballistic so much that someone else, maybe Mongoose, took over directing, and we physically went outside in the hallway. You've all been in the Ocean View Pavilion, or the entry is, where the window's at, and I straight socked Joe, like one of the only people I've ever punched. And I punched the shit out of him. I was so mad. And then, you know, we went out and everything was fine. but yeah, Shmo was a great guy.
I would order that on pay-per-view.
Speaking of funny segments, I have a question for Grant. I would like to know what it was like being the third man in the ring for the first ever Ray and Peter Entertainment Spectacular.
Another Shmo thing.
I didn't know what was going to happen, but I just went along with it. I mean, it was a lot of fun. Those two, I had a lot of fun interviews with both Ray and Peter throughout the time. And I think there was even a couple times where I got more comfortable working with them, where I even gave them a little bit back, in the interviews. But putting the fanny pack on me and putting the beard on me. It was hilarious.
Yeah, there was a lot of fun back then. There's a lot of fun now, too. It's just that I'm older and I look at it like it's exhausting to go through those shows. I mean, and Grant, in the early days, they'll tell you, we were doing 5 hours of taping in the early days. I mean, now we're doing 2 hours every 2 weeks. But way back then, we didn't have the resources. We didn't have the buildings. The rent, just to rent these venues, were $5,000, $6,000 before the lights, before the talent. And I had to get as much footage as I could back then. So we were stuck in there and it was exhausting. It was fun, but way exhausting. So to try to wrap this up here, if there's a legacy with this program, let's say we're canceled, all of our 132 affiliates tell us to go away, COVID eats us up, or we get blown up here, unfortunately, in the next, by the end of the year and the show's over and we're done. Is there a legacy with the United Wrestling Network, National Wrestling Alliance included, those years or anything? And if you want to go down the line, you're welcome to, starting with Jeremy.
Well, I'm still probably the rookie of the broadcast group here, so I'm not sure I'm the one who should start us out, but obviously there is a legacy just looking at all of the content that John is starting to pull together and Logan is editing for our social media channels. It's pretty impressive what you guys have done for the wrestling industry as a whole. And just looking at the group of people here and some of those that couldn't make it, the Joe Galleys and Kathy Kellys and others, obviously you've really left your fingerprints on a lot of people and a lot of fans over the years, Dave.
Well, thanks. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in that. It's not just me. There's a whole lot of folks. Go ahead, Jim.
I mean, to echo Jeremy, both in being a rookie and just looking at, the fact that so many people have gone on and are all over the place, whether it be in wrestling or other avenues of TV and entertainment. And the cool thing about wrestling, if the United Wrestling Network were to end tomorrow, the legacy still is that there's a blueprint for somebody else to pick up that baton and run with it. Just like Dustin was talking about how, Memphis has been dying for wrestling to come back. And, so I'm sure if this all ended, people would be like, boy, I sure missed that championship wrestling from Hollywood. And they would take that blueprint and run with it as well. And that's one of the really cool things.
Well, I don't want to, this isn't a trick question or anything. And if the answer is no, that's fine. Jeremy and Jim, did you guys watch the Hollywood show before you became a part of it or know about it?
Yes.
I did not. It didn't air here in Arizona at the time. It does now. But no, my son and I both are, are big wrestling fans, and he wanted to go see a local show. And I heard I'm friends with Justin Roberts, and I heard he was involved in a show out in Mesa. So I took him out one day, and that's how we were introduced to all of this about 4 years ago.
Yeah, I was definitely aware of it and would catch it on YouTube and everything like that. And so when I didn't have any idea though that it was coming to the Bay Area until, we talked, and then it was like the next day we're on ABC7. So that was a pretty cool deal.
All right, Dan.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's neat to be a part of all this, obviously, you know, on, you know, by watching with my grandfather growing up and stuff. So just, it's fun and I'm having a great time, and to be tied into, you know, the NWA and all the history there. And just like you said, with you guys, the history of the show itself, you know, it's been going on for 10 years now, Dave, whatever the,
yeah, this broadcast,
we're on 11 now or whatever. Like, it's awesome. It's more than, you know, I thought I'd be doing, and I'm having a blast doing it. So it's been really real fun.
Now, Emily, your story again is different. I mean, Brandon was there from the very beginning too.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of had this amazing kind of transition and journey that I've watched all of you guys over the years, and I've watched as a fan. So I started as a fan. I started as a partner watching someone in the ring, and you know, and I always loved that you guys put storytelling and you had creativity and you had innovation towards these broadcasts. And that's what I think is, you know, say it doesn't continue, which it's going to, we have great things, you know, planned, but you guys are going to pass on that creativity, that storytelling, that innovation, and that passion towards all these other people that you've inspired. Like, I've watched it for years and you guys inspired me to like get back into what I love to do. And that's part of why we all do what we do, is to inspire and connect people. So that's what means so much to me, to be a part of all of this and watch everyone grow and move on to different things and continue, you know, producing really great stuff.
Go ahead, Carl.
I'm going to keep it short and simple. If my Wikipedia page had to go up tomorrow and I was gone, just off the face of the earth, you couldn't write, and I'm pretty sure this is true for every single face I'm looking at here, you couldn't write my life story without including my involvement in the United Wrestling Network, whether it be in Hollywood, Arizona. There's no real words I can put around it, because I was a lump of clay that fell into your lap, and I continued to get molded. I don't know. I can't think of anything more fortunate for one to fall into. And once this, you know, ban lifts, and hopefully, you know, we get out, I just can't wait to see the enthusiasm. I'm getting a little emotional. Just the drive that we're all going to have once we hit the airwaves.
Awesome. All right, Dustin, I know you were watching it from afar too before you came along.
Oh, are you kidding me? I think I went back and binge watched as much as I possibly could before our premiere. Man, but you know, I've been around 13, 14 months now, and have just, like osmosis, have just picked up on the characters and some of the stories, even from when I wasn't there. But absolutely, it has a legacy, even just based off the last 14 months. I see a big legacy. I mean, you've got NWA champions, you've got mass versus title, bull rope matches. It's been crazy, man. I love it.
See, sometimes it's hard for me to wrap my head around all that stuff, because there's I see the bottom line usually anymore. I'm not necessarily involved in the direct production of the show like I used to be. So, or even the directing of the talent and helping with the characters moving along or the storylines moving along. So there's other people that I've given that work to, and I'm happy with what everybody's doing. Unfortunately, my job now is a boss, and I have to look at checkbooks and I have to look at all that other stuff. And so it's not as fun anymore, and it kind of takes me out of the magic of what everybody here is enjoying. All right, Todd, how about you?
I think there's a legacy for sure. I think the recent piece that was put together, the What is the United Wrestling Network, you know, with you speaking on that and showing the different talent that's come through there is a very powerful piece. A couple things, you know, I was really proud, you know, more recently with Coastline Clash at the Improv and finally getting that done. And the fact that we have an entertainment company like Levity Live that, you know, once things return to normal, wants to look to United and Championship Wrestling from Hollywood at live event business at their different clubs. I think that's a huge compliment. And I just remember being in the ring with Dan Joseph to do those openings And, you know, it's pro wrestling cliche as, oh, it's deafening in here. But it really was, because we didn't have cans on, and we didn't, you know, we weren't in each other's ears, and we really couldn't hear each other speak. But on top of that, I think the most gratifying thing is just the whole story arc of the NWA and how it all came full circle. And I know this is very important and emotional to you, because Columbia Square and you know, Blue Demon Jr. is a champion, and Pierce you know, the Galaxy and Showcase Theater, Glendale Studios, Pierce and Cabana. I mean, we were the arena shows like the Orleans. I mean, we had some big things going and great momentum. And then for the NWA management at the time to make the decisions that they did, you know, it ended up in hindsight being a good thing, because now we have the best of both worlds. Now that forced us to have a United Wrestling Network. It forced us to have a Hollywood Heritage champion. But when the NWA came back around, and I remember, I think it was the first 10 pounds of gold, and the 10 pounds of gold came back to the Ocean View Pavilion. And I think there was that moment where you looked at it and like, you're just like, that's pretty cool. And the fact that Johnny and I, who had been around for Pierce and Cabana and all that, were on the call of that first Aldis Tim Storm match for the title, along with Joe Galli, who's now the lead broadcaster for the NWA. It was kind of, you know, past and present and everything coming together, and it really tied it up in a nice bow. And it was a long time coming, deservingly so. And now your involvement, of course, with them. And I just think that was just, you can't write a better story than that over the years.
Well, thanks. It's interesting too, when you bring in the NWA piece to this, because there are days where, again, this isn't evil to say this, it's just there are days when I look at what we've done with the NWA in the limited time that we've been doing it, and it gets the maximum praise that's out there. And our show's been on the air for, you know, 10 plus years, and the origin of that program is our program. And although our programming and video and whatnot is on the show, fans don't necessarily associate it. So there are times I'll sit there and scratch my head and be like, well, I don't know how this isn't obvious. Not that I'm looking for accolades or anything like that. Just like, why isn't that reaching? Why isn't that hitting? And I don't know if I'll ever have the answer to that. But the other piece of the NWA for me, since you brought it up, is just my history with Harley Race and Gordon Solie. And that's really why I championed the NWA so much over the years, and was one of its loudest cheerleaders for a long time. And on our broadcast, even if we want to talk about memories or whatnot, just the whole China experience and being the first broadcast ever to originate from China in North America from a pro wrestling standpoint, just getting that show made, that 3 years into creating that 1 hour that they allowed us to bring back. And the only thing in my head while we were doing it was I was even going to approach the then ownership, which we do not get along, of how I can take the NWA world title to China, because I made that promise to Harley Race way back when. He told me there's only two places this title's never been, and that's Russia and Red China. And so when I had the opportunity to make that happen, that was maybe the first call I made, was to Lagana, said, well, we got to take this there. Yeah, no, it's been really cool to bring all that stuff back. And the Atlanta show, it's really neat. The fans are really awesome. They're really loud. They're really into it. And I'm hoping that we can create that same type of magic on the Hollywood program again going into 2021. It's a different mentality there for sure. All right, John.
You know, I'm glad that Todd brought up the What is the United Wrestling Network video that came out. Because David, I think in that interview you hit on something that I think is the core legacy of the United Wrestling Network, which is collaboration. When I think of the United Wrestling Network, I truly think of all the people that have come through the doors of the United Wrestling Network, whether it be Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, Arizona, or even other places across the globe. And the legacy that they all have in their own individual paths that all can trace back to a root in their time with the United Wrestling Network. And I think that in amongst itself is absolutely an amazing rock bed that this organization has built for itself as a legacy.
Mm-hmm. All right, Andrew.
Yeah, I remember when talking about the early days of NWA Hollywood, and I thought it was great to see some sort of an extension of the NWA. And then when the news came about that the NWA would no longer be participating, or they were, you know, somewhat breaking ties, it was almost a melancholy experience for me, saying, well, what's going to happen now? Because they're going to need that brand recognition to be successful. Otherwise, you know, what's the show worth? It's a little bit ironic, in my opinion, that the show, once it gained its own identity, became as successful as it is now. And not only that, but instead of being inspired by the NWA to do championship wrestling, the NWA is now inspired because of championship wrestling. And I fully 100% believe that program that's running right now is 100% following in the footsteps of the work that you have done. And I don't think anybody would disagree, although you somewhat remain quiet, you know, unless you're talking to us backstage, about how incredibly important you are to this process. And you've given so much to so many people. And I hope that you understand just how incredibly important you are to the business. And I give you a lot of shit, and it's because I like you. And I know you can take it, but you are incredibly valuable. And I think the legacy that goes on with championship wrestling is only going to be surpassed by the legacy of Dave Marquez.
Oh, thank you for that.
Man, okay. he really wants that announcing job back.
I was saying, no, hire me back.
Jeez.
I think he's going for
the gold. Take it easy, brother.
If that scene is TikTok, there's no reason for him to come back. The man is brilliant. Okay, Mitchell Loquasto.
I'm going to keep it quick because it's almost midnight. The show's gone on way too long. All right. One word, persistence. I mean, who would have thought? I would assume almost at 500 episodes now. I mean, it started off as NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Obviously, the current people the people in charge of the NWA at the time completely ruined everything. We kept going. And then the resurrection of the NWA came back and then became a part, like Todd mentioned, of the show, which was an amazing experience. And now you look at you guys, almost 500 episodes. I mean, that is just amazing. And it's given so many people so many opportunities, and it's really just a canvas for people to get creative. And so, yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
All right. Thank you. Okay, Blake.
Yeah, so when I think legacy, I kind of think of what lives on after something's gone, you know? And I think something that's always going to live on is going to be the talent that's come through, the things they've learned, the growth they've had, and the trajectory that Championship Wrestling Hollywood gave them in their career to be where they're at now. You know, there's been a lot of people who have come through that have been that, I mean, like, the guys that are currently big name people, you know, like MJF's doing big things, you know, along with a bunch of other guys. There's some, you know, Peter Avalon, another guy who's doing big things now. You know, I think the legacy that really gets, that'll always be there, the people that pass through there and the mark that championship wrestling made on their careers. And then all the fans that have watched, you know, the impact it's made on their lives, particularly the workers that have come through and what it's done for their careers.
Well, thank you for that. Okay, Grant.
I agree with everybody. I think that Championship Wrestling from Hollywood will be remembered long after, the great legacy for what people see. But I want to talk about something that maybe people don't see, and that is just, I really wanted to get into wrestling like around 2000. And I was talking to somebody who had been involved on the East Coast with wrestling. And he said, Grant, you do not want to get involved because it is a sleazy, sleazy business. Everybody backstabs each other. Everybody is horrible to each other. You don't want to get involved. And then 10 or so years later, when Dave, you came to me and you said, well, I'm getting involved. When I went in, you know, I like you, I like Mike. But when I went in, I was a little bit like, okay, is this going to be? And it was totally not like that at all. Everybody backstage is just a good friend. I mean, looking around at all these faces and even the folks who I have not worked with, I just know you're good people because that's who works with Dave, is good people. And there's, even though I haven't been involved with the show for a while now, you know, I know I could reach out to Dan and be really good, you know, do something together, whatever it is, reach out to anybody who is here and anybody who's not here. So
we'll go dancing.
That I think is a, that's right. that is a lot of that is a legacy I think people don't see, but that will remain within us that are here talking about it long after. But it's not going to go anywhere. Come on, Dave.
Well, you don't know right now. we're trying our best to keep it up and going. So I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. I love you all for participating in this project, this ongoing evolution of professional wrestling television. This program, again, is called The Marquez Mentality. And I would hope all you would agree that all these people have that. In some ways, some people may think that's a negative thing, but that's their problem. So we missed everybody who was not able to join us. And I hope to catch up with them later, and maybe we'll do this again. And I have no idea what this show is going to be. Nick is producing with me, as are a couple of other people. We're trying to enhance the show. This show will normally be live on Tuesdays, but because of what's going on in the world, we just felt it's best to go ahead and tape it, record it, and play it back on Wednesday. So with that, if you have any questions, you can, or suggestions, I'll send it over to Jeremy. Tell him where to go.
Follow us on United Wrestling on Twitter or United Wrestling Network on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
All right. You can ask questions, suggest guests. We'll do our best to bring people on because of my network of people in the professional wrestling industry and show business in general. You know, who knows what's going to happen here? I want to have fun with this and just let it be an outlet. So once again, thank you, everybody. Again, sorry for keeping you up late, old man Laquasto, on the East Coast. But thank you all for being here. Be safe. Take care of each other. Good night.
The proceeding has been a presentation of the United Wrestling Network.